in London.
President Trump is going out to dinner tonight to mingle with members of what he calls the fake news. He's to attend the annual dinner of the White House Correspondents Association. The dinner is held to celebrate freedom of the press. During Trump's second term, he has sued several media outlets and personally attacked journalists. I'm Noora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts. And the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms.
Welcome to The Conversation on WVIK. It's a weekly celebration of local radio the way it's meant to be brewed. This week, my guest is Eslyn Fegley from Fresh Films. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll stick around for this week's Conversation on WVIK. Well, Eslyn Fegley, this is one of those shows that I look forward to so much because I have known you in a million different contexts, and we have this this pattern in the Quad Cities of brushing past. I do really interesting people for about 3 minutes at a time, but now you're stuck. You're my guest, and I get to ask all those questions that I should have asked, over a shrimp cocktail or something at a reception. But
that's fine.
Now you're stuck right here. So thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Absolutely. I really appreciate it, Kai.
Well, we're going to get into all these different things, but we got to start at the very beginning.
I know
that you first came to the Quad Cities for collegiate reasons, yep. But where did you grow up?
I moved a lot as a kid, so I think that's actually a very similar, a lot of directors, I think, it's funny, a lot of directors end up moving a lot. So my dad was in Vietnam. He came back in probably the early 70s. And at that time, we were at an Army base, Tuttle Army. I guess it wasn't Tuttle Army base, but anyway, Savannah, Georgia.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, Savannah, Georgia. And my mother was not a big fan. It was too hot for her,
yeah, I
think, because
she was
from Canada. So,
I get that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I was born. I was actually born in Savannah, Georgia. My dad's family is originally from Philadelphia, so we ended up moving a lot and went to upstate New York. Moved to Philadelphia, lived in Philadelphia till I was about probably 5 or 6, moved to Baltimore. My dad got a job over in Baltimore and we lived in Baltimore, north of Baltimore in a place called White Marsh, Perry Hall.
Hmm.
Lived there for, till I was about 13. And then we moved to Wheaton, which was, an experience.
Yeah.
And then, at that point I was really just at high school in Wheaton and then went to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
My first year to play football, went to Concordia College in, Canada and realized that I wasn't going to be playing football. And at that point I decided to transfer and I transferred to Augustana College.
Well, there's a lot that we got to unpack right there, my friend. But before we go any further, I've always wanted to ask you this. I have a name that's not terribly standard. What's the backstory behind Eslyn?
It's actually a really funny backstory. So basically, my mother wanted to name me, I believe it was Mark Edward or something like that. My father was not a fan, and he wanted to name me George. Right? Because I was the 13th George. Every firstborn had to have George in his name. So anyway, and in those days, Dad went and signed the papers. So he decided to name me George Eslyn, thinking that my mother would never call me Eslyn, forced to call me George. It's not what happened. She called me Eslyn.
Well, I love it. It's very, very distinctive.
Thank you very much.
I'm curious. I have two older brothers, and they got perfectly Anglo names from my parents, Scott and Craig.
Right.
I mean, You might as well start a TV series around something like that. And then where the heck did Kai come from?
Yeah, what is that?
It's Swedish.
It is Kai, though. It's not like short for something.
Yeah. It's such a simple syllable that you'll find it as a name in Chinese and many Polynesian languages.
It's a great name.
I hated it when I was a kid.
Well, yeah, you and I grew up at the same time, so it was always rugged. When you had different names, it was like, all right, now what variation can I hear this week for my name?
Exactly. And then now this moving around, this is great because we're on a streak here. My guest last week grew up in upstate New York. So you got to tell me what part of upstate New York.
We grew up in, basically it was kind of where Sleepy Hollow was. So I'm trying to give you, a lot of that. My parents decided that they would buy an old house, which I guess I must have inherited from them because I love old houses.
Yeah.
And so they tried to revamp the old house, but they realized they were in a little too deep.
It's a lot.
So, yeah.
It's a lot. Well, our current president at Augustana grew up in Cortland, New York.
Really?
And the president who was here when you and I were students grew up in North Tonawanda. So I'm always intrigued by these
upstate
threads to upstate New York. But I certainly get going off and away to college. But after that first year, how had you ever heard of Augustana? I mean,
Two buddies.
That's
two buddies because it was just Chicago suburbs. You know, Augustana was big at that point. And I have to be honest with you, I looked at a couple of different places, but I came to Augustana. I think that what happened was is that I liked, kind of going into theater, looking for scholarships. Mm-hmm. It was actually very funny at that time. My parents were like, okay, you're going to go to Augustana College, private school. Yeah, good luck. And then I ended up lucking out and getting a few scholarships. And I'm like, well, I got half the money. And my parents were like, oh, son of a... I got to pay the rest. So then I came here. And and to be honest with you, really got into theater. But the great thing was, you've heard again and again with Augustana. It's like you can do so many different things. So I enjoyed the theater part of it, but I also enjoyed the other parts of it. You know, I was in the social part of it. So I wasn't necessarily buried in that, but I loved the arts. I loved history and classics and all of that. So,
well, I often tell new parents when they're freaking out about so many different things. I said, look, if you want to get your kid a free college education as soon as possible, put an oboe or a bassoon in that kid's hands.
That's so true.
That's right, because so places like Augustana, we do not give athletic scholarships. We cannot. We're prevented by the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
But you got a wicked turn on an oboe, we're going to take care of you.
We'll take care of you. Exactly. And that's true. I mean, that's what's great about it. I think a lot of people don't think about the arts.
Yeah.
Very much. And I'd say my generationally, I'm an Xer. So generationally, I think that our generation was very much, I got to get an athletic scholarship.
Yeah.
What's wrong with the arts?
Yeah, right. Fewer concussions too, except in the brass section.
That's get a little true. Rough. Get hit in the head with a trombone.
Okay. So you land here, and in a minute, we're going to talk about this remarkable career you've built in filmmaking. But where were the seeds of that when you look back? Were you intrigued by film as a consumer? Did you practice? Did you make some? Because we had a film class at Rock Island High School.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to tell you more about that in a minute. But how did your spark begin?
You know, it's so funny. I didn't come into film through the classic way of the camera side of it, right? Making movies at home, doing that kind of stuff. I came into it through the acting side of it. Always a huge fan. I mean, I dressed up as Darth Vader as a kid. Exactly. I still have my Star Wars stuff at home. So a gigantic, Star Wars fan, like millions of us are. And so I just love films. And I started probably the film that really made me think about being a filmmaker was my grandfather took me to see The Blade Runner when I was a kid. And he, obviously it was a rated R film, so it was very risque. But my grandfather was that kind of guy. Hey, you want to see it? Let's go. And he wanted to leave.
Oh, my.
He wanted to leave. He's like, this movie is so slow. I'm done. He was kind of, and I made him stay. I'm like, I love it. I want to watch it. And so I fell in love with that film. And really, that film is probably what drove me to it. And several years later, sitting in Los Angeles, and when you're an actor, this is the thing that's the most difficult part about being an actor, is for two things. First of all, you're spending 80 to 90% of your day trying to get the next job.
Yeah.
So a lot of us work on the art, but really we should work on the business because you're spending, when you're in LA or when you're as an actor, you're spending 90% of your time trying to get the job. And always get a kick out of this. I always love saying it as I watched a Quentin Tarantino and I'm like, this guy doesn't make very good movies. I'm thinking, I could probably make a movie. So I was the opposite side of the Tarantino filmmaking culture. And I thought, you know what? This guy doesn't make very good movies. I could make a movie.
Exactly.
And so I picked up a great book called by Rick Schmidt called Making Feature Films at Used Car Prices. And I picked it up and that was my film school. Mm. And so kind of went in that direction and just started making, started writing and fumbled along. And that was when I did Tollbridge Tile, which is really funny because you and I talked way back in the 90s when I had done that. When you were here at Augustana, and I actually shot bits and pieces of it here at Augustana. So, yeah, that was a heck of a, that's how I got into
that. Well, I'm not going to leave you hanging, but there was this amazing teacher, still a part of Rock Island community, Chuck Astrike, and he taught a film class at Rocky. And some of these guys that I grew up with went on and took all of his classes, and they kept making movies that you'd have to bring it up to Jewel Osco to develop and then put a sound. Sometimes it was just a cassette trying to sync it up, that kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
And they were so good that Mr. Astrike would actually have like an open house at the end of the school year and show them in the auditorium. Well, one of them, they're all good friends of mine, this particular cohort. A couple of them went to SIU for film school.
Really?
And then actually made a Student Academy Award winning film that won in 80, in the somewhere in the 80s.
That's amazing.
And then continued the career in film. But the reason I bring that up is you talked about Blade Runner. So this guy was the ideal friend to have in high school and then in college.
Right.
Because he would special order rentals of these VHS cassettes. And there was a place out on Black Hawk Road called Black Hawk Video. They had all these obscure titles.
Yeah.
And he would make us watch things. I mean, some of them we liked, some of them we didn't like. But my filmography of things that I was exposed to are all there because of this dude. I'm talking like Sunset Boulevard.
Oh,
I mean, no, until AMC came along, nobody knew what that was.
No one knew what that
Stalag
was.
Stalag 17.
Oh,
you know?
God.
You mentioned Blade Runner. Of course he made sure that we saw Blade Runner.
Blade Runner's a film.
And I'm glad you mentioned your grandpa. My dad took us to films that we were not old enough to go to. I mean, and
that's cool.
He was a pastor, so I'm just glad he wasn't wearing a collar as he's taking an 8-year-old boy into Blazing Saddles. It was the perfect time to see that movie.
I'm just going
to say. I feel so lucky because we were exposed to these flicks. Well, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, again, nowadays, you can just sit down at a laptop, click a couple of keys, and you can get all of those
things. That's amazing.
So other than Blade Runner, what would be some of the films of your youth or the nascent part of your career that you consider formative? You mentioned Tarantino. I think he tried to show us, is Reservoir Dogs Tarantino?
Reservoir Dogs is also
I didn't
Tarantino.
Like that.
I'm not a Tarantino guy.
And neither am I. I'm more of a Wes Anderson kind of guy. I get into his
Wes Anderson's very fun because he's very, you know, very stylized filmmaking. You know, he's really fun in that
sense.
It
rewards you watching the film six times. I mean, so it's good for box office.
Right.
What are some other films for you, Estlin?
Oh God, Kai! It's always funny. I always get asked this question by a lot of our filmmakers at Fresh Films. And to be honest with you, there's so many, and for so many different reasons. Blade Runner is my favorite because it's just cleanly my favorite, right? But so many other different films for different reasons, right? So, for example, Tartakovsky's Solaris, right? I would never ever recommend that film to anybody unless they're a filmmaker. It's dreadfully slow.
I've never even heard of it.
It's a very famous Russian filmmaker. It's incredibly slow, but it's visually stunning. It is what I would call a filmmaker film, right? So it's a film that you're going to watch because you want to see the visual side of it. Tartakovsky is definitely an artist coming from that Russian side, tortured side. But then there's films like it's so much funny. I watch so much animation at this point. I'm just trying to go to something more mainstream. I mean, to me, something silly and goofy like an Arnold Schwarzenegger film.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
I mean, it's the simple notion of the plot line and how it's constructed.
Right.
So, you know, you're going from beat to beat and how you fill those moments out and how you construct them. And so much in the way the storyline is. I think a lot of times when when films get too big, they end up fumbling the ball a little bit because it's like there really are some formulaic beats to it. And, you know, Aristotelian modeling on how it would work, you know, how the build, denouement, all of that stuff. But so many films, I love Kurosawa. Kurosawa is a great filmmaker. But again, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. Good, the Bad, the Ugly is one of my faves. And I got a chance a couple years ago to actually see it on film because you got to remember, I missed a lot of those films as a kid. I didn't sit in the theater and watch them. So to sit in the theater and watch The Good, the Bad, the Ugly with an audience, somebody brought, because they re-released the old film and updated and everything else, and to sit with an audience, and I'm laughing at parts at home going, does anybody else really find this funny? And you really do like Eli Wallach is so funny in that film, right? You know, if you're going to shoot, shoot, you know, and but it's so, you know, in our day and age. But Clint Eastwood, it was just fun in the sense that he took the script and he's like got rid of almost all of his lines. So I mean, it's that kind of stuff. So I love, I just love good films. Like I mean, so much of it. It's funny. When you're younger, you watch a lot more films. As you get older and you become a filmmaker, and I don't know if this is necessarily the case across the board with other filmmakers, but as I get older, I don't watch as much film. I don't watch as much film. I watch occasional film. And a lot of people are like, why didn't you watch this? Or didn't you watch that? I didn't watch that. Because you get to a point in your life where you need to be your own artist. You know? And it's important that you see other films. But there comes a point in your life, too, where you got to be your own artist and step out on your own and figure out where you want to go. So,
Well, and this guy, he's back in the area. So, he's been on the show. His name's Rob Humphrey. And he took me to, well, all these great, great films. But we decided when, I always want to say Police Squad.
It's Police Squad.
Naked Gun. Naked Gun. When they did the remake with Liam Neeson. And the two of us went, and, you know, we hadn't been to theater. He goes to theaters a lot. But there was only one other person in the audience. But just to be and experience that, it's so juvenile. It's so juvenile. I'm almost ashamed to say, but my sides were hurting by the time we left. And the poor woman who was in the back, she finally felt comfortable that she was letting it rip, you know, by the end of the movie. But sometimes you got to have that experience. I owe a great debt of gratitude to Don Wooten, the founder of this station and this show, is as a listener event back in the 80s. And I think when we talked about Tollbridge, I think I was still in the newsroom.
You were.
He did a listener event and we watched Lawrence of Arabia on a big screen. He rented out the old Parkway Cinema in Moline. And that movie to experience on a big screen. And you don't get up and leave during the intermission where it literally says intermission. And then there's this beautiful sweeping orchestral suite. Nobody gets up and leaves. You just wanted to sit there. He also did a couple of opera films. I remember especially La Traviata. I think Fellini made that. But it was just the opera. But it was everything on the big screen is just so much better. But I get that, you're not as interested in other things. We want to get into this career of yours. And so let's start with, what were you doing that paved the way to the founding of Fresh Films?
God, that's a great question.
It's actually, public radio, so you got time.
You know, it's funny. In life, I always say this. It's funny. Then I tell this to filmmakers. It's like, don't underestimate things that don't overlook things. Don't be too big for stuff. Sometimes the doorway that opens for you is a doorway that you don't expect. And Fresh Films was definitely that doorway. What I mean by that is at that time we were, you know, very early on in my career, probably after Tollbridge, this thing called the online space. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's called the internet.
That thing.
Yeah. It's just, that was a new thing at that time. And people were like, you know, what is this? It's garbage. And I, at that time was like, this would be the only way you're going to make it into the industry, which is really funny. And so we're like, okay, let's do it. And at that time, my partner, Kelly, she was at, you know, thank God for Kelly, because, you know, if it wasn't for Kelly, this wouldn't happen. But she was at Northwestern at the time getting her MBA, and we met a bunch of different people. We had actually proposed creating a business plan. We proposed this idea of creating a studio where people could come in. Basically, it was a different version of Fresh Films at the time, which was hilarious. So we bumped into a guy. His name is Lyle Banks. That's a shout out to you, Lyle. Great guy. He used to be the president. At that time, he was the president of NBC in Chicago. And so he had left that position and had had two stations in Wichita, Kansas, and Boise, Idaho.
Okay.
Right? And so he's like, I got this online space. I got kids coming, filmmaking, you know, kids coming to it. I don't know what to do with it. Can you create some content for it? And I'm like, yeah, sure, absolutely. So we created like a version of the Twilight Zone. We called it Book of Stories at the time. And so we had a bunch of writers kind of write stuff. We did a few. I did a small version to try to start it off and put it on. It got really good traction. But because it was a new space, you know, you still had streaming issues. Things came in pixelated. People didn't necessarily have platforms. It was Real Player. It was, Windows Media, all of that stuff at that time. And so things came in pixelated. He's like, I really love it. But next, I don't know if we're going to do it again. Maybe we'll do it one more time. And we're like, okay. So at that moment, strangely enough, we were approached by a group called After School Matters.
Okay.
And After School Matters, give you a little background, was started by Maggie Daly, the mayor of Chicago's wife. I don't know if she came up with the idea herself, but she definitely magnified it in the city of Chicago. So basically what they decided to do was pay students to stay after school and to do all sorts of different things. And that was... It was called, ASM was called, there was a tech version, a art version, all sorts of different versions. So they'd have a muralist come in. Mm. And it was great because they'd pay the muralist and the muralist would work with the students. But it wasn't like teaching them. It was like, let's go paint a mural.
Mm-hmm.
And they would learn alongside of it. And so they opened up the filmmaking side of it. And there was a school in the West Side called Orr High School.
Mm-hmm.
And the West Side of Chicago, I don't know if you've ever been there. It's,
a little rough.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And, but the group before us was like, no, we're not going to that. And so they asked us. And I said, yeah, what the heck? I'll do it. So we went out there. I said, I went in there and said, you know what? I'll go in. We'll talk about filmmaking. And I thought they were going to kill me. I mean, I literally went in there and started talking about filmmaking. They're looking at me like, oh, man, seriously, you're going to lecture to us? It's like, oh, God. And I'm like, I literally get in a shower next morning. And I'm like, what the hell am I going to do with these kids? I can't.
Yeah.
Like, we're making a show for Lyle. Why don't we have the kids make the movies?
Bingo.
Like, we'll make the movies. The kids will make the movies with us. Unbelievable. It was like a rocket ship. And all of a sudden, we were there. We were in a bunch of different schools for after school management. We were in three different schools. I had to hire a staff. It wasn't like we were making a ton of money. So these artists are jumping in. And it was an amazing experience. We did it for about 3 years. And then eventually, because of Kelly's experience, we got sponsorship for it. And funny enough, Wrigley was our first sponsor, Wrigley Gum.
Wow.
And they have a brand called Winter Fresh.
Love it.
And Kelly said to me, why don't we name it Fresh Films? And I'm like, oh, God, I hate that name. There you go.
Well,
and so that's what it's been ever since. It was called Fresh Films. And after that, it took off, had celebrities. It's just been an incredible ride. It's just crazy.
Yeah. And we're going to get into that ride in just a minute, but we're going to have a little bit of a break here, friends. We want you to stick with us. You are listening to The Conversation on WVIK. My guest is Eslin Fegley from Fresh Films. We're going to learn a lot more about the work that they've done and continue to do right here in River City and film industry general, and I don't know, life, the universe, whatever comes our way. What we do know is that it's a lovely morning in the Quad Cities. Clear skies tonight mean good things for the open house at the John Deere Planetarium here on the Augustana campus. But right now, you're listening to WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. Stay tuned. The conversation continues. Okay.
Support for WVIK comes from Rafferty Funeral Home, a family-owned business where Kevin Rafferty and staff are committed to making each celebration of life unique and memorable, offering complete funeral, cremation, and pre-arrangement services to all faiths. Information at RaffertyFunerals.com or 309-797-1900. And support for WVIK comes from Aunt Rhody's Landscaping and Design Studio in Eldridge. Designing and installing landscapes to include patios, fire pits, ponds, outdoor lighting, and more. A full scope of services and scheduling consults is available at AuntRhody's.com. And support for WVIK also comes from Verde Dental, an all-female dental team committed to providing a patient-focused approach to dental care in a comfortable environment. Appointments with Dr. Verde can be made by calling 309-764-7631 or visiting verdedental.com.
And welcome back to the conversation. This is Kai Swanson. My guest this week is Eslyn Fegley from Fresh Films, and we were just about getting to the part where we're going to find out how this launches. I didn't know any of that stuff about Wrigley and Winterfresh. I think it is all genius, and yes, you're smart to listen to your partner, Kelly, who I think we can also divulge, also your spouse.
Correct.
There you go. So,
correct. No one else would be goofy enough to follow me into this crazy thing.
I have a similar situation. I made one good decision,
exactly.
And then that's all that really mattered. So,
exactly.
Okay. So you started talking about making these connections, and it's been fun to see, just watch from afar. You bring some really big names into conjunction with some great local kids, Chicago kids. Tell us about then the evolution of Fresh Films.
Yeah, so basically, Fresh Films really was rocking and rolling, I think, all the way up until probably, this is so funny, it sounds like it's basically a billion years ago, was up until about 2011. At that point, we had, we were connected with Coca-Cola, we were a bunch of different celebrities involved, including Donald Faison, who's now back on Scrubs. By the way, very, very sweet guy, Donald Faison.
Oh, it just comes off. I can tell just from watching it.
He
just seems like a great guy.
Yeah. He is that guy. So really, really fantastic. And so we decided to start shifting gears and doing a feature. So we decided to do a feature called The Stream. And at that time, we put it together. We shot it out in Philadelphia. We shot it out in on the East Coast because a lot of the, Fresh Films has been working with a lot of different clubs, a lot of different groups. Most of our groups at that time were out on the East Coast that were going to get involved with that. So we shot it out east. We shot it out in Philadelphia. And then basically trying to get a celebrity on it, because a lot of times when you're doing film, especially film, in that period, you need celebrities.
You got to drop a name.
You've got to drop a name, yeah. So at that time, Kelly's got a great story about this. A lot of people are like, oh my gosh, how did you get that person? How did you get that person? It's like, well, I got on the phone and called their agent.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not that difficult because what's the worst thing they're going to say? No.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many no's that I've gotten in my life. Probably 99% no's. And it's that 1-2% that's yes, that opens up a doorway. It really isn't, it really isn't about, when you're doing something professionally, everybody's got talent.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's talented. I would argue if we walk in a room, I'm the least talented of the bunch. But I can tell you one thing, I'm probably the dumb enough to just keep going. I never quit. And that's really the secret to success is just never quitting and keeping going. So we tried to get, I can't think of the one actor's name, in Ethan Hawke, right?
Oh, sure, Ethan Hawke, yeah.
Yeah, Ethan Hawke, we tried to get him in. No, Mark Wahlberg, no. Mm. And at that time, one of our clubs, a Boys and Girls Club up in Boston, was actually directly connected to Mark Wahlberg. Mark Wahlberg was a big supporter of it.
Yeah.
So Mark Wahlberg said no, and I'm like, okay. And at that point, we had gotten Mario Lopez, mm-hmm. who had jumped in, mm-hmm. and who was a Boys and Girls Clubber.
Right.
Who had jumped in the film. Great, really sweet guy. And at that point, the publicist, Mario Lopez's publicist was mm-hmm. the same publicist as Rainn Wilson.
Hmm.
And so we got a hold of publicist. The publicist was like, yeah, I'll give Rainn a call. Rainn got involved in it, and it was great. I mean, Rainn was, he had a great time with it. I think in some ways he's at the end of The Office. This is the thing that people don't understand too. Just because somebody is a celebrity doesn't mean that they're trying to find a job.
Right.
Everybody's trying to find a job.
Right.
You're trying to find the next gig, next job. And so Rainn was kind of in the middle of it. He jumped in, really had a great time. Has been a longtime supporter of Fresh Films.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Every time we're like, hey, Rain, would you mind jumping in? He's like, yeah. He jumps in. We've done interviews with him. So he's been great. But that's kind of where it was for a while. We were doing a lot of feature work. We went on. We worked with Steve Guttenberg,
yes,
which was so much fun. Steve Guttenberg is a...
I hope he's as funny as he
is.
I want to think he is.
Super sweet guy. Super sweet guy. As a matter of fact, he calls me up and, you know, it was funny. You were bringing up Police Academy.
Yes. Yeah.
And we had worked on another show with... Why am I having these days? This is the problem.
While you're thinking of it, I just want to, you mentioned Rainn Wilson, and I just got to say, I mean, I've rarely seen somebody create two such compelling characters that are so different, because the role he had on The Office, then my wife and I were just, we just loved the series Mom. He had a role on that in the last years of it that was... You would not recognize that that was the same actor.
Right.
But it was such a great role, and he just nailed it. So if you're talking to him, tell him there's at least one huge fan of his out here on the west coast of Illinois. All right. Did you think of it? I was trying to buy you some time.
Well, you didn't think of it, but you made me think of another story, which I think I'll get a kick out of. When I was working with Rain, we were going in, and at that time, we went into a costume fitting, and Rain Wilson went and got his MFA at NYU.
Mm.
And it was really funny because I came out of the actor side of it. So I went into, I got my MFA in acting, right? Mm-hmm, my Master of Fine Arts in Acting. And so I was invited to go to NYU. And Rain and I are not too, Rain's probably maybe 2 years or 3 years older than me, but he's right there.
Yeah.
And so him and I started talking, and I said, oh, do you know Ron Van Loo? Ron Van Loo was an acting, famous, very famous acting coach at NYU. And he's like, yeah, how do you know Ron Van Loo? I said, because I was supposed to go to NYU. And I said, really? They said, yeah, you and I probably would have known each other in graduate school. But he's a dynamite actor. A lot of the stuff that he did for the stream, he did it in 1 to 2 takes.
Mm.
And he's like, don't you want to do more takes? I'm like, no, Rain, you and I talked about it. It's great.
But I don't want to get too far away from the fact that through all of this, you got young people who have these incredibly bright futures, but maybe not the best of launch pads.
Yes.
And you're helping to give that to them. So talk about how that part of Fresh Films' mission is lived out.
So much everything that we've done since the beginning is still in the Fresh Film style.
Yeah.
So that means that every time you walk on one of our sets, you have a professional crew, but working with that crew and on cameras, on the audio gear, on all that stuff, are filmmakers. And most of our filmmakers are coming from places like the west side of Chicago, places like Roxbury and Boston and Atlanta, and they're coming from all over the country. Matter of fact, in some ways, too, here in Rock Island.
Yeah.
You know, so many ways, Rock Island. Rock Island's been a big supporter of what we're doing in the Quad Cities. But yeah, along the way, they've been doing that. And fortunately enough, some of them have gone into the industry. A filmmaker named Rami Yosef, who had a show called Rami, on NBC for many years. Mm-hmm. He's won Golden Globes, and he was one of our filmmakers.
Was he really?
Yeah.
I like that guy. That's great.
Yep. And then there's a writer named, there's writers, producers, Derek Simon, who's a writer who writes for Supergirl and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
He's a fantastic guy. He comes back and mentors our filmmakers and stuff like that. So it's amazing to see that circle come to life.
Well, you mentioned the quads, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit about how your footprint is fleshing out there. But you can't talk about Rock Island at this time on a Saturday morning on WVIK without talking about Rock Island Line. So for those of you who aren't familiar, Roald Tweet was a professor at Augie who intended to come here for just a year or two after his PhD at the University of Chicago and wound up building a beautiful career and becoming really the official storyteller of our town. And he started in a little partnership, or maybe conspiracy, with Don Wooten to create these capsules called Rock Island Lines. Huh. Well, the Rock Island Line was a great road made famous by Lead Belly, a blues artist who everyone knew his song. But what Tweet did was he took that notion and he would write a few lines about Rock Island. And then we would put those together, and he did several hundred of them and very graciously gifted them to all of us. And so, friends, with that little bit of backstory, it's time for this week's installment of Rock Island Lines on your public radio station, WVIK.
Mm-hmm. This is Roel Tweet on Rock Island. How could you and I have let America's railroads die? We Rock Islanders have more reason to ask that than most. The Rock Island Road was not only a mighty fine road, it was named after us, and we owed it all those things godparents owe. The Chicago and Rock Island Railroad became the first train to reach the Mississippi River in 1854. 2 years later, it crossed the Mississippi and headed west as the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific Railroad, and later as the Rock Island Lines. By the 1920s, some 74 trains a day were arriving and departing from stations within sight of Rock Island. Moving out along the river or climbing through valleys between the bluffs, an octopus, the writer Frank Norris called it, deciding which towns flourished and which died. That is why none of us could believe the news in 1975 when the Rock Island Lines declared bankruptcy. What measly matter of a few dollars could take down these mighty machines on their iron rails? The Rock had just traded in its old red engines for a modern logo and a new blue, white, and black color scheme. We knew, of course, that the Rock had only one passenger train left, a slower and slower round trip from Rock Island to Chicago as the rail bed gave way. But that trip was still a popular stress reliever. Breakfast on the train at 6:40, shopping or theater in Chicago, and dinner on the return trip that evening at 5:30. Civilization even students could afford. In 1979, the trips to Chicago stopped. Storms that year killed harvests and dried up shipping revenues. We still did not believe. This was our Rock. Then, early in 1980, a federal judge ordered the line liquidated, the first liquidation of a Class I railroad in United States history. 7,000 workers were out of jobs, and the great Silvis shops, once the largest and most modern railroad repair works in the country, lay silent. I'm reminded of that famous tombstone epitaph. I told you I was sick.
Rock Island Lines with Roel Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And we get to hear it each and every week, friends, because folks just like you think it's important to have a public radio station in town, and they go to WVIK.org and they look up in the right-hand corner of that screen and they see a bright red button that says Donate. So if you're not a member, why don't you take a minute and become one? And this is a special episode of Rock Island Lines. I didn't realize this was the one where he was going to talk about the old railroad. My guest is Eslin Fegley from Fresh Films. But you see, I'm of an age where when summer would come along, yeah, at least once a summer, Mom would load her husband and three boys into a Ford Country Squire wagon and take us down to the depot in the morning. And we'd get on the Rock Island Rocket. We'd go up to Chicago. We'd get off. We'd do maybe a little bit of sightseeing, go to a Cubs game, get some kind of a burger somewhere downtown, get back at the, it was the station on the south side, and I'm blanking on the name right
it's,
now.
Union. Is it Union
it was, no, it's not it, Union. It was, they had their own station. It's not LaSalle. It's the third one. Anyway, we would get on that station and come home. And all those years, I thought this was a special treat for us. No, it was a very special treat for my mother to be rid of us for an entire day. I grew up just a few blocks from the 44th Street crossing in the lines, and you could just hear it die because every night we didn't have air conditioning, so you'd lift up in the windows and you'd hear the click, 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 click. And then it got slower and slower and slower because they couldn't reinvest in the stock. So that's a very special episode of Rock Island Lines on your public radio station. And we're going to keep it rolling here on this station as long as you keep WVIK in fighting trim. And you get to hear really cool things from cool people like Eslin Fegley. So we were just talking about Fresh Films. And I do think you came up with that name, right?
Yes, I did.
All right, tell us the rest of that
and
story.
He's going to be PO'd that I did this. Tim Kazurinsky.
I'll tell you that we're editing it out. We won't, but I'll tell you that. So
that's,
good.
That Tim Kazurinsky. I agree. Okay. Tim Kazurinsky. So Tim was in the old Saturday Night Live with Eddie Murphy and all of that. Mm. So I grew up with Tim Kazurinsky. So basically, Tim was doing a show with us called Detectives Club. And at that point, we were doing Alt Universe, a rescue mission. We're doing the movie, and I had no celebrity for that film. And I'm like, Tim, can you jump? And he's like, I can't jump into this. Tim is a great guy. He's got all sorts of an amazing backstory. One day, I'm sure you're going to have him in here. He's dynamite. But I said to him, Tim, I need to have somebody. He's like, how about Steve Guttenberg?
Awesome.
And I'm like, yeah, I'll take Steve Guttenberg.
Sure.
So Steve came in. He's like, okay, listen, here's what I need. I need to have a white hair. I need a scar for this character. I need this, that. And I was like, okay, whatever you want, bud.
You got it.
He was just a really fun guy to have on set.
Well, now you've talked about how Fresh Films has a broad reach. It's like that octopus tweet was talking about.
Yes.
But where geographically do Rock Island and the Quad Cities fit into that?
You know, it's funny. I think what's great about the Quad Cities is that because it is so centrally located, we originally started in Chicago, obviously. We were in Chicago for, gosh, a long time, at least 20 years, more than 20 years is where we began. Came out to Augustana to sort of build their film program, which was great. We were there for 7 years working, and it started in 2020. You know, we'd always been working our second level, which was our film level. So basically the stuff I've been talking about is we would do that every summer.
Okay.
So we'd bring in 100 filmmakers, 15 at a time, through a set, do that. We did that every summer. That's what we did for years. Mm. And then 2020 came.
Yeah.
Couldn't do a summer program, had a film set up. We're like, oh God, what are we going to do? Because, you know, we have sponsors. We have all of this stuff. People are like, okay, well, what are you doing with that? So I'm like, you know what? Let's just go on to Google Meets. We'll have filmmakers come on. We'll do films that way. And that took off. That took off and got big enough that now over the last few years, we have 35 sites all over the country. We have two virtual sites that are like the first 2020 sites. But at this point, too, we have sites in Boston, Atlanta, L.A., obviously, the Quad Cities, at least four sites in the Quad Cities, which has been great. And then obviously Chicago and Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And then an occasional sprinkling of other sites across the country. But every Tuesday we get on, we do the program, we still run it. It runs in basically the winter to spring. And it's filmmaking. Mm. So basically we work filmmaking with all of these different groups. They don't pay for it. Mm. Filmmakers come in, they do it for free. So we're able to really reach the kind of filmmakers that really need that boost, that don't have the opportunities that others have. And so we run four different programs. We do music videos. This year we work with 300 Entertainment, which is out of Atlantic Records. We had a few of their artists. We've done documentaries with the Roku channel. It's amazing. We actually doing now social media how-tos. And then finally we work with Sony for short films. And so that's what the filmmakers work on.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that industry as a whole. I don't follow it closely, but I understand that Chicago is a burgeoning production market, and in part because fewer people are as intrigued about spending a lot of money in Georgia and in the Deep South. And originally that was because the labor was a lot cheaper. But what is it about the market that's turning Illinois into more of a film destination?
It really boils down to the tax credits that are going on across the country. But Illinois already has Chicago. Chicago's got Chicago. We've got amazing stuff here. We've got, obviously, farmland, small town. We've got, we were just talking about the poor Rock Island line, but it's caused a lot of industrial, but filmmakers love that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they love that kind of stuff. So it has just driven the market. The other thing that's been amazing is that they have done tax incentives to actually go out of Chicago, which is great. Chicago has a 35% tax incentive for films. And here outside of Chicago, it's 40%, which is probably one of the most aggressive tax credits in the country. But really what's happening in the industry is that they have to make more content cheaper.
Yeah.
And so they're going outside, and LA's, obviously people have heard about LA, but they're leaving LA because they can do it so much cheaper in Illinois.
Yeah.
They can do it so much cheaper in other states that have these incentives. Atlanta, you brought up. Atlanta just lost Marvel. They pulled it out of Atlanta. I really don't know the reasons why, but I actually don't know the reasons why to
sure,
it.
Yeah, sure, sure, sure.
But I think Illinois,
I bet you money's involved somehow, right?
I'm sure it is, but I to give you specifics on it, I don't really know.
No, I get it.
The state of Illinois is really very aggressive in attracting it.
In terms of attracting films, this is local legend, so I cannot vouch for its efficacy, but as Tweet, I had him for freshman rhetoric, as he told us, one must never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Exactly.
But in the late 70s, when these two hotshot celebrities from Saturday Night Live, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi, were going to make a film called The Blues Brothers, the inspiration from the first album, because they made an album out of this thing, was that they were from Rock Island, Illinois.
Yeah.
And that's why we have the sculpture downtown. Mm-hmm. And the story was that the town, this was before the downturn, and so it was often called Fort Gatonia because it didn't care about the economy of the rest. We were humming along.
Right.
I can't even begin to describe what this joint was like back then. But that our city leader said, we don't want a bunch of Hollywood types around here. And they turned down, this is the story, the opportunity to be production sites for Blues Brothers when they were shooting in Joliet and everywhere else in Chicago.
Right.
Well, then you fast forward about 5 years and the IH plant shuts down, the Farmall plant, one of the largest manufacturers of farm implements in the world.
Right.
And Ron Howard is looking for venues for a film he was going to make called Gung Ho about Rust Belt and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we begged and pleaded for him to come to Rock Island. And we lost it to a plant, I think, in Tennessee or something
right.
But we had a vacant plant. So I know viscerally whereof you speak about this kind of stuff. I want to talk about the educational aspects because, you know, when you and I knew each other first in our 20s, mm-hmm. we were, I mean, I may still be shallow, but we were at least shallower then than we are now. And it takes a little bit of living and a little bit of a few laps around the sun to bring these things into focus. And you talked about the many no's you have to walk through to get to yes. How do you help imbue that lesson or just pass it along to the young people you work with, that it's okay to make mistakes?
Right.
How do you do that?
No, I think it is. I think it's just the grounding nature of what you do. And what I mean by that is, like, it's okay to make mistakes. And in our program, I want you to make mistakes, but I want you to get across the line. Whatever you bring across the line, bring it across the line, because you know what? It's just going to get better and you're going to feel better. You're going to feel better about yourself. You learn more from a no than you, and I've heard this a million times, you really do. You learn more from a no than you learn from a yes. And so for a lot of young filmmakers, it's like, get it across the line, get it finished. Once you've finished, then take the good stuff that you've done, bring it to your next project, keep on trying, keep on going, because I'm going to tell you this, guys, your favorite filmmaker, whoever you think of, I bet you if you ask them, do you think that you're a master? Do you think that you know everything about filmmaking? I would argue Martin Scorsese, Spike Lee, all the rest in their hearts would say, I'm beginning to know that I know less and less as I go forward.
Hmm.
And it is, you just keep going forward.
Hmm.
And I think that's what you talk about. And you just make yourself open to them and say, it's okay, go out there, but keep swinging.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to miss 100% of the pitches you don't swing at. Just take a swing.
Yeah, yeah. I often ascribe this to my old man, because if I can't remember where a lesson came from, he's just a good default. But the lesson was, you know, a mistake is only a failure if you refuse to learn from it.
Right.
Because often we want to, you know, brush past our mistakes.
Absolutely.
And, to take that time to do that. What are you looking forward to? First, with Fresh Films, do you have any fun stuff? Well, you probably can't give us too many details, but anything you're looking forward to professionally, and then I'm going to turn that on you personally. But first, what are you looking forward to professionally?
Well, I'm really looking forward to, first of all, we're trying to get our film we just shot here in the Quad Cities called Groundhog Gary, 6 More Weeks. We are back and forth right now with alternating currents. We're trying to create a premiere, so we'll see what happens there. Really looking forward to that. Really looking forward to another film that we're actually going to be doing a series, which is really fun. It comes full circle. We're going to be doing a series with Nicole O'Rourke, who has a... she is an internet phenom. Unbelievable. Like, I don't know when she sleeps. we're going to be doing a series with her based on kind of one of her older projects called Dearly Departed that we're going to be putting online.
Oh.
And she's going to be supporting. So we're going to be shooting that here in the QC this summer. And we're going to be bringing 90-some filmmakers in to shoot that. But it's a series, which would be really fun. It's about a girl who moves into a house and all of a sudden she sees dead people and sort of helps them to find where they're going. So that's that I'm really looking forward to. It's sort of going back to the old fresh films and going online mm-hmm. and shooting that way. And so much of that is really becoming very much mainstream, which is fun. You know, sometimes when you're trying to get distribution on bigger portals, there's a lot of walls in your way, a lot of obstacles.
Only imagine.
It is. And then, but I think what I'm really looking forward to is it's a different kind of obstacle with the online space. It's getting eyeballs on it, but at least you've got the enablability to get out there and get people to watch it. Right. Get butts in the seats, as we would say.
Butts in the seats.
So I'm looking forward to that.
What about on the personal level? You got a family. You're a Rock Island kid now. Yeah. What are you looking forward to on the personal front?
Well, personally, I think what's crazy is I'm empty nesting, which
is
very strange. Yeah, it's really weird. I think in some ways, my Kelly and I probably are weird from other parents. We really do look forward to hanging out with our children. We travel with our kids, everything else. We find hanging out with our kids actually very relaxing.
Yeah.
All the stuff they're dealing with, all those things. I mean, you know, there's deals. There's things you got to deal with your kids. But we really enjoy being with them. And it's going to be strange. Our youngest is moving on to Northern Iowa. So it's wild.
Yeah.
Very, very strange. So Kelly and I are looking at each other. Oh, my God. We work together all the time. And now we're going to be here at home all the time. Oh, boy.
I think you'll do just fine.
Hopefully, yes.
Now, we talked a little bit about movies. But one thing I like to ask, especially when my guest is a very interesting person, is are you reading anything interesting? Are you consuming any media whatsoever that you'd like to offer as a tip to the rest of us?
Oh, my gosh, Kai. My stuff is so boring.
No, I don't care.
You know, I always go back to my classics and my history. I'm a history junkie. Mm. I'm reading the commentaries by Julius Caesar.
Hey, I love that.
I've never read it.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. But that's the kind of stuff I'm very much into when I'm, you know, I love history. I'm watching. Actually, the other thing I'm really excited about is hockey is back.
Yeah.
My family grew up in Philadelphia, so I'm a giant Phillies, Flyers, Eagles fan.
All that stuff.
I mean, I love the Bears, love Chicago, lived there for many years, but I've always been a fan. So the Flyers are finally back in the playoffs, so that's exciting stuff. So
well, I'm grateful to hear that. And I know that you said you're not watching too many movies, but I do have to give a shout out. This friend of mine, like I said, he's back in town, and he got me to watch a film called The Death of Stalin, which
was amazing.
And you should not be able to say Steve Buscemi works as Nikita Khrushchev, but he does.
He's good.
It's an amazing experience. It's a great film to watch. And on the book front, our little Augustana Fiction Club finally plowed its way through Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell.
Oh, right. Okay.
I haven't seen that movie. I don't know that I need to. The book was very good.
Okay.
And we've decided now to set our sights on Queen Esther by, why am I blanking? Cider House Rules. It's John Irving. John Irving. We each had a moment there. That was great. So, all right, we're going to run out of time. I'm sorry, but any last words?
Any last words is we are building a studio here in Rock Island. Woo-hoo! So we want to make sure that we're drawing some excitement there. So Fresh Films is here to stay, and we're building, which is really funny. You said Rock Line. It's called Rock Line Studios, so
we're
looking for support. So,
well, fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for spending some time in your busy schedule to be here, and that's going to have to do it.
Kai.
Oh, thank you. My guest this week, Eslin Fegley from Fresh Films. You can find out a lot more online. Check them out. And also, remember, friends, you can catch the conversation twice each week on WVIK, Saturday mornings like you just did here at 10 o'clock before Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Then there's a rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8 right after Fresh Air. You can also find recent episodes at WVIK.org, and just look for us under the podcast tab. From the campus of Augustana College, this is Kai Swanson inviting you to join us next week for the conversation on WVIK. And our guest will be Amy Schaefer from the YWCA of the Quad Cities. Don't miss it. But at least get outside today because the weather's going to be lovely sunny. High near 73, tonight mostly clear. Overnight low in the upper 40s and back to mostly sunny tomorrow. So enjoy it, friends. Thanks for tuning in to Quad Cities NPR, WVIK.
You've been listening to The Conversation on WVIK. If you missed part of it or just want to hear it again, tune in at 8 o'clock on Monday evening. right here on WVIK. Support for WVIK Quad Cities NPR comes from the Regional Development Authority, distributing funds from the Rhythm City Casino Resort to help make the Quad Cities a more vibrant and inclusive community. Learn more at rdauthority.org.
I'm Jessica, and WVIK is my NPR station.
With national and international news at the top of every hour and local news throughout your day, we're WVIK, 90.3 FM and HD Rock Island, and at 95.9 FM, K240DZ Dubuque, WVIK, Quad Cities NPR.